Young Dorothy Gale lived a relatively quiet, secure, and peaceful life with her dog Toto on a spacious Kansas farm with her Uncle Henry and Auntie Em. Life was pretty black and white. Routine. You got that. It was very routine, predictable. Get up, go to school, come home, help with chores, enjoy time with family and friends. And yet Dorothy dreamed of a place somewhere over the rainbow, where skies are blue and the dreams that you dare to dream really do come true. The classic MGM movie, The Wizard of Oz, was released 84 years ago on August the 25th, 1939, and it was based on the book, The Wonderful Wizard of Oz by L. Frank Baum. Through this excellent adventure story, we dramatically see and hear the beautiful story of Dorothy as she is transformed and transported in living technicolor to the land of Oz. On the day our story begins, everything changed when Dorothy and the family were confronted by the local sheriff and the wealthy Elmira Gulch. It appears that Toto has bitten Miss Gulch, so she has obtained a sheriff's order authorizing her to seize the little dog to be put down. Seems like everybody's afraid of Miss Gulch, and she's not very likable. I get it. We have a dog named Bingo, because Bingo is his name-o. And I believe that if our dog doesn't like you, I probably won't like you either. So Dorothy's faithful companion is reluctantly surrendered to Miss Gulch. But Toto escapes, runs back home to Dorothy, and she is now afraid because it's too dangerous to remain on the farm. Dorothy decides she has to run away from home to protect Toto and the family from the long arm of the law and the wicked Miss Gulch. So she packs up her basket and heads down the dusty dirt road where she meets Professor Marvel. He's a fortune teller, looks into his crystal ball, and he urges Dorothy to go back home. Her aunt is worried and calling for her. She and Toto run off into a literal storm. A strong tornado is heading their way. She's locked out of the storm shelter, runs into the house, is knocked unconscious, and the tornado rips the house off the foundation. Her life flashes before her eyes as they go flying off to Munchkin Land, where the house lands with a crunch in the land of Oz. Dorothy and Toto go on a magical journey to meet the Wizard of Oz. And along the way, she makes new friends and enemies. She's saved and guided by the good witch Glinda, honored by the Munchkins, hounded by the Wicked Witch of the West and her flying monkeys. Say it with me. I'll get you, my pretty, and your little dog, too. And she's protected and becomes deeply bonded to her new friends, the Scarecrow, the Tin Man, and the Lion. All of them head to the Emerald City, where they hope their dreams and wishes will be granted by the great and powerful Wizard of Oz. Dorothy even got some pretty powerful ruby red slippers to dance and sing her way down the yellow brick road. The Scarecrow wants a brain, the Tin Man a heart, and the Cowardly Lion wants some courage. Dorothy just wants to go home. I love The Wizard of Oz. I don't know if you can tell. And it remains one of my all-time favorite movies. As a child, I remember sucking in helium at a birthday party and singing, "Follow the Yellow Brick Road," just like the Munchkins. And getting very nervous when the lion jumped out of the window as the wizard yells at him. It was a magical, scary story, and it was filled with so many themes about life, love, family, and friendship, facing and overcoming our fears, and especially for me, the journey and longing for home. Home. I believe home is where our stories begin. One of the ways we share what's important to us is through story. Storytelling allows us to deepen our connection to ourselves and to each other in often very meaningful ways. Stories allow us to make sense of the world and find meaning in our experiences as we share our thoughts, our feelings, and our memories. I was born in Baltimore in 1963, and yes, I just turned 60 on June 27th. Yeah, it wasn't really a good thing. No, it was. But welcome to a new decade, right? My parents were born in Virginia and West Virginia. They came to Baltimore when both sets of my grandparents moved to Maryland for work. And my mom and dad met in high school. My older sister was born in Norfolk when my dad was in the Navy, and a few years after I was born, my parents divorced. Growing up, we often lived with my mother's mother, my little blue-haired granny, and she was, without a doubt, the most influential person in my life. She was a deeply religious Baptist Christian, a devoted Sunday school teacher, and her faith was demonstrated in very loving ways. In Bluefield, West Virginia, she taught in a one-room schoolhouse, and she was my kindergarten teacher in Baltimore. By the way, I'm an emotional person. So. She taught me the fine art of grace mixed with discipline. And most importantly, she introduced me to coffee. We were both early risers. My grandfather was a struggling alcoholic, and he died when I was 9 years old from liver cirrhosis. My granny seemed to be the anchor for us, and she died in my home in 1998 with the support of Frederick Hospice. I was grateful to be at her bedside when she passed, and I'm so thankful for her life and for her legacy of love. And I can't see. My mother married two more times before I was nine. My little brother was born when I was six, and it felt to me that our family was always on the move, in transition, and life was often filled with what felt like instability and chaos. I lived in 11 different places by the time I was in fourth grade. And my stepfather was in the Air Force, so we continued to move a lot. We moved to Eglin Air Force Base in Florida when I was 11 and lived in a little town called Niceville. And it actually is very nice. As an adolescent and young teenager, I loved riding my bike, swimming, canoeing, and fishing. I enjoyed sports, karate, and music. We went to church every Sunday. It felt like every day, morning and night. And often on Wednesdays for youth group. I sang in choirs, plays, and musicals. I'd play clarinet in the band and orchestra, and I was a pretty good student and in the National Honor Society. So I kept pretty busy. Looking back as an adult, I came to realize that I got involved in so many things when I was a kid because it was hard to be at home. My home was filled with unpredictability, yelling, fights and arguments, strong emotions and fear. We were also a family of secrets. We lived one way at home and we projected another way to our neighbors and friends, but especially at church. Living in the South, we knew and understand the power of judgment, gossip, shame, and fear. And I found out it's not just in the South. We knew and understood the power of all of that, of judgment, gossip, shame, fear. So we kept it in the house. I learned to suppress, to hide, to be invisible, to stay out of the way, to be busy and be gone. When I argued, asked why, or stood my ground, things got ugly. For me, school and church, that all that life felt safe. And several teachers and ministers served as excellent role models for me. But home was not always a safe place. It got so bad that just before my 16th birthday, I asked my father and my stepmother if I could come live with them in Baltimore. I knew I had to escape. It wasn't safe for me, and I felt like I no longer belonged there. I could not live there anymore. So between my 10th and 11th grade, I moved to Maryland, and my sister moved soon after graduation to live with us too. Please understand, there were times when home was wonderful, when I did feel loved, supported, and accepted. But the times of violence, anger, and disconnect seem to overwhelm and replace those memories as a young person. I've also resolved and attended to the wounds of the past. Even though they're still emotional, I've talked to my parents and my siblings, and we have very strong relationships now. My father and my stepmother have both died, and I will be always grateful for their love of family. Moving back to Maryland gave me a chance to have a new home, a new start. And yet it wasn't perfect either. None of us and none of our homes are perfect. A lot happens when we choose or feel like we have to leave our homes behind. Sometimes we identify with the refugee, the person who is forced to leave their homeland due to fear of death, persecution, crime, or the inability to live safely in their home. I am amazed and filled with sadness and compassion when I see thousands of people traveling on foot from Mexico, Central and South America to the United States. They're refugees, forced to leave their homes due to reasons beyond their control because it's no longer safe for them. Many would rather remain at home, but are willing to take extreme risks for the hope of a better life. The refugee is a reluctant leaver, one who struggles with unwanted and forced change, who grieves the loss of their home and yet is seeking a new home, a new start. I hope our government, our society, and communities can find healthy and effective ways to better care for the refugee, those who are homeless, and those who feel like they have limited choices and resources. Whether someone has lost their home due to war or famine, financial constraints, poverty, and an inability to pay excessive rent or obtain a mortgage, or they're displaced due to a disaster such as a hurricane or because of the recent wildfires in Hawaii. My hope is that we can support those who are struggling with homelessness and housing insecurity. According to Maslow's hierarchy of needs, in order for someone to feel secure, their physiological needs for air, water, food, shelter, sleep, clothing, and the right to reproduce must be met at a foundational level. Creating a home is vital to the human spirit. I'm so grateful that our UU Church is actively involved in caring for people through the Frederick Religious Coalition, the Family Emergency Shelter, the Frederick Rescue Mission, Frederick Community Action Agency, the Alan P. Linton Emergency Shelter, and we have members who are deeply committed to serving with the Refugee Welcoming Coalition of Frederick, and so many more that I could not mention now. All of us can find ways to support these worthy efforts to ease the suffering of others. According to a recent Psychology Today article, a strong attachment to a place that you live results in greater satisfaction with your home and expectations of future stability in that place. Because our physical surroundings play such an important role in creating a sense of meaning and organization in our lives, it's not surprising that our sense of the place we live is closely tied to our sense of who we are. Having a place to call home is strongly associated with our identity. Home is that place where we feel like we belong, where we're welcomed, loved, accepted, cared for, and can put down roots. It's where we develop a sense of value, of community, connection, and familiarity, where we can know and be known by others. And it should be a safe place where we can be accepted just as we are. And Sabrina, thank you so much for your meditation. It was so meaningful to me. The need for a sense of home is instinctual, deeply rooted in the heart, mind, and body of the human, and necessary to fulfill our sense of belonging and interconnectedness to ourselves and to others. Home is not just a physical place, it's a feeling too, and it's often discovered and lived out in our heart, minds, and in our spiritual lives too. After I graduated from high school, I completed my bachelor's degree from Towson University and went on a mission trip to Rwanda, Africa, where I felt a strong call to serve in the ministry. I earned my Master of Divinity degree from Southern Seminary, was ordained to the ministry, moved to Delaware, and eventually returned home to Maryland, landing in Frederick, and thankfully not with a crunch. Seminary studies gave me the freedom to explore, wrestle with, and settle some deeply profound spiritual and theological questions. I had those questions that I had, and it prepared me to be a minister in the local church. And yet, I still didn't always feel at home as a Baptist. I often had this little Sesame Street song going on in my head. One of these things is not like the other. You know what I'm talking about. I was a progressive living in a conservative world that didn't quite feel like spiritual home for me. As a progressive person, I can accept and minister to people who are different from me, of course. But church didn't always feel like spiritual home for me or for my wife, Jan. I also discovered that I became increasingly alarmed and uncomfortable with the way Baptists were identifying themselves. I felt like I was being forced to accept change by those who wanted more control, authority, and a narrower view of theology, society, service, life, and ministry. It was no longer about those things we held in common. I felt like my spiritual home had left me. But I also knew I was growing and changing, evolving, and releasing. I needed to find a new spiritual home. So when I retired from full-time church ministry in December of 2019, I accepted the position of senior manager for bereavement and spiritual care services for Hospice of Washington County. And I've been serving as a chaplain since 2012. Chaplaincy allows me to express compassionate care for all people, and especially for those who are suffering and going through potentially one of the most chaotic times of their lives. Approaching the end of life can often feel like a tornado. Through chaplaincy, I'm free to be fully present, to be a good listener, and hear the stories that matter to someone, to be a calming presence and a companion for those who are on a journey, to affirm what matters to them, to help them find meaning in their experiences, and help people feel loved and cared for with dignity, respect, and compassion, to feel accepted and valuable, to remind them that they belong. No judgment, no shame, no guilt or conditions. They are loved, and that is enough. People can often find freedom in release as they let go of those things that might be a source of suffering. Chaplaincy also allows me to fully demonstrate our first UU principle by expressing and validating the inherent worth and dignity of every person and the acceptance of others. When I left full-time church ministry, Jan and I began to talk about our spiritual need for home. We wanted to belong to a community that was inclusive, empowering, and one that valued everyone, a place that demonstrated acceptance, love, and connection, a place that encouraged thorough and thoughtful questioning. I've always been the why kid. That was smart, mindful, emotionally sensitive, and well-grounded, a place where we could belong, where every voice mattered, and where we could be known and know others too, a place that lived out the values and principles that really matter to us. So we said, if you could go anywhere, no matter how wild and crazy it might be, where would you go? And we both said, why don't we visit the UU church? You see, we felt like spiritual refugees, no longer able to live in our spiritual homes, no longer safe or free to simply be who we are. So in February of 2020, Jan and I quietly slipped in the side door where we were asked to fill out a bright red name tag. So being anonymous didn't seem to be an option. So all kidding aside, while I was wrestling and resisting putting on a name tag, I was asked a very important question. Do you wish to remain unknown? Wow. In a flash, I was confronted with a deeply held question and a belief. Do I wish to remain unknown? You see, as I mentioned, I grew up in a home filled with secrets, where I was a ghost, Mr. Cellophane, where you could look right through me, and it was what I knew to be safe. The last thing I wanted to do was to draw attention to myself. So thanks for that red name tag. Did I wish to remain unknown? No. My need to belong flooded over me. And I said, okay, I'll take the name tag. So we sat on the right, in the back row, right over there, not knowing what to expect, totally out of our comfort zone, and yet we wanted to remain open to the unexpected, to this new and different experience. And when Reverend Carl rang the bell, I took a deep breath and several more in order to center my heart and my mind, to look inside and to let go of what I needed to let go of, to be more fully present to myself, to one another, and to the sacred in this time and place. Jan and I both cried when we sang Spirit of Life for the first time. And I still get teary when I sing the line, stir in my heart all the stirrings of compassion. A few weeks after our first visit, all of our lives were changed by COVID and our inability to gather in person. So we began to visit online, and we also watched several other services in our community to kind of check them out. I'm naturally curious, so I joined the Buddhist meditation group virtually on Sunday mornings. And having already read other Buddhist books, I wanted to explore this small group, and a book study seemed like a great door for me. I love this small group and enjoy getting to know Whitney, both Nancy's, Carol, Fanny, and other members. Jan and I later met with Reverend Carl, discovered we had much in common, and joined as official members, standing before you this past May, as we embraced our covenant to walk together. This past spring, I joined the choir, and I love singing with Deb, Nick, and our exceptional choir members. Jeff, Barb, Polly, Dick, and Nancy were the first people who shared their stories with me and welcomed me with open arms. And I love our worship musicians, liturgists, and speakers. Another connection I made was with Dr. Coleman, since he and I served together with hospice, and I continue to find more connections here every week. I have found a new spiritual home. With my work in hospice, people talk about home all the time. They love to share stories about where they grew up, their families of origin, parents, grandparents, siblings, being single, gay, or straight, wives and husbands, children, friends, pets, and all the supportive people in their lives. They share about their faith, their guiding principles and values, what's important to them, and what is no longer meaningful or necessary. People are often vulnerable and share stories of trauma and violence in their home, deaths and losses by murder, suicide, accidents or overdose, loss of physical, mental, and emotional health, struggling with addiction, past wounds, regret, remorse, and sometimes the need to forgive and to be forgiven, to find peace. People often talk about their adventures, vacations, trips overseas and across the country, and yet they almost always talk about coming home. When someone has been in a hospital or care facility, they just want to go home. Our conversations can sometimes stay on the surface, or sometimes, if someone can feel safe enough, they pull back the curtain and reveal the truth of who they really are. I'm often humbled by their trust and vulnerability, and I hold their stories in my heart. Sometimes they talk about going home spiritually, and they describe their desire for eternal life, for their eternal home or heaven, or to a place of eternal bliss, joy, enlightenment, and comfort, or to the great unknown. Ultimately, I believe we all have a desire to no longer experience suffering, to be free of pain in this life, and for some, in the life to come. Last week, I was with a patient, and at the end of our visit, I asked if she needed anything. She placed her 96-year-old hands on her heart, and as she gently patted her chest, she said, "Honey, I am satisfied." I have all I need. She was already home. So what feels like home to you? If home is that sense of belonging, a place where we feel loved, accepted, and cared for, when one feels valuable, connected, and safe, how are you able to express that for yourself? I love the song Tin Man by the classic rock band America, and those great lyrics, Oz never did give nothing to the Tin Man that he didn't already have. The Scarecrow already had a clever brain. The Tin Man had a beautiful heart, and the Lion had a tremendous amount of courage. And as we discover, Dorothy was already home. All of them just needed to see and believe and accept that those things were already within themselves. And to have someone affirm and validate that for them was such a great gift. I must admit, I'm still on the journey to self-acceptance, to feeling at home within myself. But I'm further down the road, and I'm heading for home. So maybe you're someone who feels like a refugee or a commuter, a traveler, one who's always on the go, a wanderer, and you're in search of a home. For me, I hope to feel at home within myself, in my heart and mind, and to be at home wherever I may physically be at the time, to live with an open, grateful, and humble heart, filled with compassion, acceptance, and love, to live, work, and serve in community, to know and to be known, and to openly embrace and accept all people just for who they are. And so I have found that place, and I believe Dorothy got it right. There's no place like home. May your path lead you home, and may you be well. Let us rise in body or in spirit as we sing hymn number 108, My Life Flows On, in endless song.